Am I a name that you've known in San Diego for years? I'm too young to be known for years. At least I think of myself that way. David Cotton, this is Into the Night on your Thursday afternoon. Thank you for joining me. Wonderful show for you. Wonderful co-hostess. Barbarella is here. We're going to chat with her in just a minute. But first, a little music. Here's Matthew Sweet and Susanna Hoffs.
You don't get me.
That is Matthew Sweet and Susanna Hoffs, and that's the Beatles song. You may remember that, and This Bird Can Sing. This is Into the Night. I'm David Cotton. As I said, joined today, she was so good when I had her on here before that I brought her back, the diva from the San Diego Reader and from Blog World, Barbarella. Thank you for coming in again.
Thank you for having me.
You were so good the last time. And so
oh, no pressure. Okay, great. Good to know.
Don't F up this time.
All right,
okay?
You can say it. This is the internet, David.
Don't fuck up. Okay, yeah, right. Yeah, I just got to explain. What the heck? We're going for broke at this stage. Barbarella, by the way, the Diary of a Diva, you may be familiar with that. You can see her and read her and more.
And see my videos.
And see your videos at sdreader.com and divabarbarella.com.
Check me out.
I haven't seen the Reader yet today. What are you writing about today?
I wrote about going to the zoo, the world-famous San Diego Zoo, and how most women, as little girls, harbor a secret desire to become a veterinarian and work with animals because we like all things cute and cuddly. So the video I have that goes with my article is all the animals at the zoo that I went and harassed. Not really. And it's a
crazy
one.
You went to the zoo voluntarily.
I love the zoo. I'm an animal. I was attacked by a squirrel. You remember that?
Yes, I do remember.
Yeah, I have
that.
A thing for animals.
Do you have a favorite animal at the zoo?
Oh, meerkats.
Oh, meerkats. Yeah. Isn't that cool the way they play sentry and they stand up there and look at...
Yeah,
look
and I have some fun meerkats in the video, too.
You have meerkats in the video.
Yeah.
Right. Did your husband go with you?
No. My friend Jen. My friend Jen actually got me the membership, and so now we're going to go all the time.
Do you like SeaWorld as well?
Yeah.
You do?
Not as much.
Yeah. But you're animal-y, as they say.
Animalistic?
No, yeah. Not animal-y.
Rare.
Animalistic.
I don't know.
Do you guys have pets at home?
No.
Why not?
Because we travel too much. I'm a diva, remember?
Oh, that's right.
I'm a jet setter. I have no time for animals or plants.
Even a cat?
No, especially a cat. I have leather.
Oh, you have a leather.
Okay.
That's why I have
I like
a
to
cat.
Joke with David. I had cats when we first met, and I ended up giving them away because of our traveling, and he didn't want cats. And I actually wrote about this years ago, and I got so much hate mail. Remember he's saying, how could you choose a man? I said, yeah, how can I choose a lifetime partner I'm in love with over these two animals? I don't know. What a horrible person I am.
I hate to ask this, but what happened to the cats?
I found a home for them.
Oh,
and I insisted on meeting the people directly and delivering them through. I totally freaked them out, too. I was crying and bawling and chasing after the car. It was bad.
No, you know, on the subject of cats, I love when these transitions happen just naturally.
Palin?
Yeah, let's... Let's be a little catty about the GOP keynote speech last night. This was trumpeted by the Republican Party as the chance for Sarah Palin, the presumptive vice presidential nominee, to show her stuff, to be human, to appeal to the nation.
She showed that she's a great performer and can read a wonderful speech that was written by Bush's speechwriters. So, yes, she is a good performer and she knows how to puppet.
Now you watched,
but those weren't her words.
You watched the speech. So let me ask you to evaluate it in two ways. First of all, evaluate it as a voter. And second of all, evaluate it as a woman.
Okay, as a voter, propaganda. And it was so clear to me. It's so transparent to me. I'd be shocked that people don't see right through it. It's 1984. You know, they're saying the same things in support of her that were said criticizing Obama just weeks ago. Now, as a woman, you know, I really have no thoughts on that as a woman, just as a person, you know. So she has a vagina. That's great. You know, so do a lot of soccer moms and hockey moms, and that's wonderful. I have one, too, you know, and I lead my homeowners association, so perhaps I am qualified to be the next puppet.
Well, as... Puppet. As...
I go...
I can't resist.
And she's anti-women choice, and she's anti-equal pay. And this right. is her—the only record she has is that she's against women having the right to choose and against equal pay. Ah. Is she really a woman, or is she hiding a dick?
Well, let me get this in before we
go ahead.
Jump on that. You know, Jeff Garlin, the comedian who many of our listeners may know from Curb Your Enthusiasm, famously once said, "I'm pro-vagina." And I will I echo that. However,
okay,
it depends on who it belongs to, and in this case,
and where it's located.
Now, again, I ask you this as
okay.
a woman.
Yes,
clearly, and I don't think I'm going out on a limb here. Clearly, part of the strategy to put her on the ticket was to appeal not just to a conservative base, but to allegedly appeal to a woman voter
the
base.
The only part of the strategy. Okay. Yeah, that was the strategy.
How do you, you know, as a woman, feel about that?
I'm insulted.
You
as
are.
A woman and a voter, I am insulted that they could take somebody and just go, oh, look, she has long hair and a vagina, too. She completely believes in everything the opposite of Hillary and the Democrats that you have thus been supporting. But check her out. She's kind of hot. Don't be sexist. We say she's hot. You can't. And, you know, be dumb enough to fall for this. Now, the unfortunate thing is a lot of people will be dumb enough.
And a lot of people,
won't.
And a lot of people who perhaps are not in that constituency necessarily will be dumb enough to fall
for
it.
What do you mean in that?
In the GOP base, as they call it.
Right. Exactly. Not the hardcore right wing. You mean some people more middle line? They might be. Unfortunately, there are dumb people in the world.
Now, you talked about the speech and the fact that it was a well-written, at the very least.
It was a well-written attack dog sort of thing by Bush's people, the same way that, you know, that their whole agenda right now is attack because they've got nothing to say. Oh, we have a smasher.
Yeah. We're going to come back and talk some more about this.
Let's smash something. I'm angry.
I'm pissed enough to smash something.
I want to throw something against a wall.
You may remember.
Can somebody help us with that?
Yes. Thank you. Isn't she good? I couldn't do it without her. You know, a couple of weeks ago, you weren't here, Barbarella, but I had Sarah from Sarah's Smash Shack. I've been practicing saying that again here in the studio. And she promised to revisit us via the phone and smash something for us. Are you there, Sarah?
I am. How are you?
Good. How's business?
It's good. We're doing great.
Are you in the mood to smash something?
Well, yeah. I just kind of heard a little bit about what you got to talking about.
He's smash
ready.
Happy.
Did that put you in the frame of mind to break something?
Oh, you know it.
What are you going? Where are you, and what are you going to break for us?
I'm in our smaller break room, which accommodates three people, up to three people. And I think I'm going to break several different kinds of plates, I guess, for you.
Okay. I don't think we need to embellish that any more than you just did. So whenever you're ready, go to it.
Did you hear that?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I felt it. I want one.
Oops.
Give me one. Give me one.
Is making you feel better yet?
Yeah. I feel like I'm in the middle of a domestic dispute.
You know, it actually does. You know, it's a release in a way.
I'm doing it for you.
Well, thank
we
you.
We appreciate that.
You rock.
Let's reiterate, Sarah, for just a moment. When we had you in here before, you were talking about the catharsis of doing this. Tell us a little more about that. Why this makes you feel good?
Well, you know, honestly, it's just a little transference of energy. You got a little something going on, and you break that plate, and that energy just dissipates with the plate. So it's not necessarily about anything therapeutic or specific. It's just fun doing something naughty, kind of letting go and forgetting about stuff. Like anything you do to forget about life for a while. See a movie, go to the bar, whatever.
What about
break some stuff.
What about champagne glasses? David said that you broke champagne glasses on a fireplace. Is that possible? Because I would love to do that.
You can bring in champagne glasses, and actually we have a new menu item that's a kind of a mystery box, and it will probably have a champagne glass in there, among other fun things.
Wow. So
you open it up, you unwrap it, and you kind of just get what you get. But it'll be good because we're going to make them really fun.
Now, Barbarella wasn't here when I talked to you before, Sarah. So for her benefit, tell us about some of the menu items you have there.
Well, sorry, we have our standard stack of 15 white, like, diner plates, which break. Those are what I was just breaking. Very fun. You can write on them, you know, your little mantras or whatever before you toss them. We've got clear glass plates that just shatter like a waterfall. We've got vases, jugs, huge wine goblets. They're really, I think, candle holders, but they're like
champagne glass.
2 feet tall. Yeah, it's like a gigantic, well, it's more like a gigantic daiquiri glass.
Can I fill it with liquid first?
No. That makes it a little hard for me to clean it up. Because all of our glass remnants go to mosaic artists to be recycled through a variety of programs. Special ed, local junior high, women's transitional housing. So we like to keep the glass pretty clean so we can pass it on and let them use it.
Oh, that's great. So it's good to know that there's a use on the other end. That was my
absolutely.
Next question. So.
And, I mean, it's even better than that. A lot of my inventory is stuff that I'm kind of heading off at the pass, which was on its way to a dumpster to go into a landfill and is now coming here and being broken and going on to become mosaic art.
Two great uses.
Yes.
For what would have been trash.
Pretty much.
So you can do this and be environmentally responsible at the same time.
And
we
contributing
are
to
because
culture.
That is a really huge issue for us, and it always has been from the inception of, you know, this store was, what are we going to do with this stuff? And everybody wants to know, and, you know, it's all good.
Now, give us again your address and your website.
1353 6th Avenue, downtown between Ash and A. And the website is smashshack.com. And you've got it down, David, Smash Shack.
Smash Shack. And before you go, could you possibly break one more thing for us?
Well, yeah, here, I'll break, let me break something more in the vein of the large champagne glass.
Oh, yay.
Okay.
Okay.
This is just for you.
Thank you.
Ready? Let's see if I can do it well.
My favorite part was the little grunt right before you let go.
Oh, geez, did you hear that?
Yeah. That meant you really were doing it, and I appreciate that more than you know.
Oh, well, good. You should stop in and visit me sometime.
I'll have to.
Sarah, thanks for coming on with us again. I appreciate it, and I feel better.
Oh, I'm so glad. That's what we're trying to do here. We're just trying to spread a little bit of goodwill, humor, lightness.
One more quick question. I would love to see, like, are there any follow-up where you can actually see the art made by those broken glasses
You know what? Everybody is going to, we're going to go out and have photography done when they're all done, and we're going to post all the artwork and the artist's information on the website as the pieces are made. Yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Sarah of Sarah's Smash Shack. Thanks again, dear.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you later.
Okay. Bye.
That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I told you it was.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
In a weird way. I wouldn't think it, but I like it.
Yeah, if you could break anything that you wanted to in there, regardless of whether she said it was available. What?
Champagne glass against fireplace, like I said, yeah.
Is that a celebratory thing for you?
It's just, you know, it's, oh, what is, how do you describe that? You know, it's just so lavish and over the top and almost obscene that, you know,
it's a decadent thing to do.
Exactly. I want to eat some dark chocolate, drink some champagne, and just toss it like, you know, they have no cares in the world. I wouldn't, because then you have to deal with the glass and the cleanup, and Rydell is expensive.
That's the problem, is cleaning the damn thing up, you know.
Right. Which is why the service comes in handy.
I don't mean to pry, but did you do this on your honeymoon?
No, I didn't have a honeymoon.
You didn't?
No. Remember, we went to the county, and then our honeymoon was to go grocery shopping, because I'm not into that.
You're not into honeymooning?
I honeymoon 3 times a year, I guess. We just got back from Montreal last week.
That's
right. And we had, shortly after we ran to the county, just coincidentally, we ended up going to Europe for 5 weeks. I mean, we travel a lot anyway. My life is a honeymoon, David.
You're a brother.
Yeah.
We
honeymooned last night.
TMI. TMI, Barbarella. But I guess what I was leading up to was, have you and David, that's her husband, by the way, not me, that's her husband's name as well.
Yeah, my David.
Your David. Have you and your David broken champagne glasses in such a fashion?
No. I think the reason I fantasize about it and like the idea of it so much is because it's something I wouldn't do. I'm way too practical. And in my life to do that. I was very tempted once over the winter in Vermont because we had the fireplace, we had the glasses, and it was, you know, I was twitching with, trying to withhold myself from doing it. But I succeeded.
You did. I don't believe I've ever done that either.
No. Well, let's.
Yeah. Okay. Come on.
We can go to the Smash Shack.
We'll get Alana to go out and get us some expensive champagne glass because she's just working here for
a hobby.
Why is she going
to do it? You go out and get it.
Okay.
You're the man.
Out.
That's haven't right. We, haven't I'll... we shown if Palin's taught us anything, isn't it that women are superior? I don't.
Well, I knew that anyway. You don't need this radio show to teach me that. I've been reminded of that all too many times.
All right.
You know, let's go back to Palin, by the way, now that we've got our aggression out. You and I were talking off mic before we actually went on that this is, and we're not telling people something they don't already know, but this is a landmark election for many reasons. And, you know, frankly, I'd like to see it come out one way, but that's neither here nor there. I do think it's important that people vote more than ever with this election. What do you think the climate is going to be like among the electorate in the next 8 weeks before the election?
Now, define that for me a little bit. What do you mean, what is the climate going to be like among the electorate? I mean, can you be a little more specific?
First of all, let's narrow it down to our own city.
Okay.
And perhaps our own community. Are people going to be, A, politically active? Are people going to be, B, talking about the election?
Yeah. I think people, I mean, and I count myself as one of these people, I have never felt so strongly about an election ever. And I think because so many people realize that the issues that are now the platform issues that have become after Palin came up with the really right-wing conservative stuff, the religious stuff, the issues are now those hot-button divisive issues. And so what we'll see even locally, and what I'm seeing on Twitter and in the blog world, because I am, you know, on it all day long, is that people are passionate about it, so passionate they're getting involved. I had never before donated to a candidate, you know, and David did recently after we saw the Democratic National Convention. And I think younger people are getting more involved because just of the way that the information is being disseminated online, and you got P. Diddy involved. I mean, more people are involved and more people are taking it on a very personal level, where in the past it was just this loud, boring stuff like, okay, you have money, you have this. Now we're talking about abortion. You know, we're talking about my right as a woman to choose what happens to my body. We're talking about banning books in the school and government intervention in a way that the government decides, or the smaller, you know, government supposedly decides what's right for you. We're talking about my freedom. You know, things that I hold very dear, my privacy, you know, all kinds of things. Plus, we have wars going on all over the world, and we're talking about international relations. So there are people, like my father is one, there are people that see, you know, the right as, you know, the Republicans here as the people to stand in and really handle these wars and get involved in it. And that's their person, and they believe that. But I don't know who believes it strongly on either side. I think I just like got word salad right there, kind of towards the end.
Word salad, that's good.
No, my point is that people feel more strongly about it. The right feels stronger, but they have very little to stand on. You know, so it's sort of the attack version, and the left feels strong because they're so passionate about this and what's riding on it for everybody, and I agree with you. I think the best thing is that this will make more people involved. For right or left, for middle, for pro or anti, more people will speak, and that's the whole point of this politic thing, is to get the people heard, right?
Speaking of people getting heard, one thing that, and you touched on this peripherally in that salad you just dished up,
thank you.
One thing that's very different here in 2008 from, say, 2000 when W was first elected. We did have the internet, of course, or as he calls it, the internets. But one thing that is different is that the blog community, of which you are a part of, is much, much, much more widespread, if there even was one in 2000. What impact will that alone
have
on?
And it's faster. It's not just more widespread, it's faster. I mean, I'm on Twitter now, which is every 5 seconds. You have NPR twittering the speeches word for word, and you're getting it immediately. I mean, we're mainlined. So when something hits, we all know it immediately. And then before we really have a chance to have it digested by media and sort of communicated, it just hits everybody at once. And it's almost like we've become a more reactive emotionally.
Well, given the speed of that, how has that changed the influence of the mainstream media during the coverage of this campaign?
I don't really have an answer for that. I'm not sure that it's really changed the influence. It may be, I think, because there's so many different ways to access the media and the information that perhaps they don't have as much of a say. But I still think they're very influential. Even though you're getting it online, it's still mainstream media dishing it out in a lot of ways.
There's still a significant...
And tabloids have a lot of effect.
It does. Yeah. But there's still a significant number of people, I don't have figures, but who don't use the blogosphere and are still relying on television as their primary source of election, quote, news.
Mm-hmm.
And those people are not going to be necessarily changed by the advance in technology or the new speed of technology.
Especially if the information is the same. If I see on Twitter immediately what somebody is going to see on the news later. I mean, if the information's the same, I could see that not making much of a difference.
In terms of an opinion maker, of which you are, let's go back to Sarah Palin's speech last night. You got this immediate propaganda push that she gave a great speech. Even the likes of, you know, KNX Radio was saying that, and they're supposedly not, you know, biased one way or the other. Is that kind of reaction inevitable? Once one person says it, it's out there.
This is interesting. You say once one person says it.
Right.
I have been thinking a lot about 1984 and, you know, the book. And if you say it, then it becomes fact. Like, we are not at war. We have never been at war. I have been noticing a lot with the pundits and everybody and the campaign people, especially McCain's campaign people, just repeating the same catchphrases. We're a maverick and she has more experience. And not backing it up. She has more experience. If you say it enough, I do think that a good majority of people out there not really taking the next step to look up the issues and to dig a little deeper are going to go, oh, well, I've heard it 1,000 times, therefore it must be true. Just like you hear a radio song a couple of times and you have it memorized. You know, it just becomes fact. And that is scary.
And I don't think that's changed over the years. I think that's probably ingrained in...
Not since
nature.
TV.
Not since TV.
Well, not like I remember. I'm three.
We're going to take a break and come back with much more frivolity and a little music, so don't go away. We'll leave.